WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Pentecostalism is the fastest-growing Christian movement on Earth. In Africa, Pentecostal congregations are becoming the main expression of Christianity. Several Latin American countries, which have been dominated by the Roman Catholic Church, are now approaching Pentecostal majorities. My guest Harvey Cox spent 5 years visiting Pentecostal churches throughout America and around the world. He says these churches offer clues about some of the larger changes happening in religion today. Cox has been studying new religious movements for 3 decades. He's a theologian, a professor of religion at Harvard, and author of the new book, Fire from Heaven, The Rise of Pentecostal Spirituality and the Reshaping of Religion in the 21st Century. I asked him why he thinks Pentecostalism is growing so rapidly around the world.
In a word, they emphasize very strongly the experience, the direct experience of God, of the Holy Spirit, and not so much the institutional or the doctrinal packaging that most other religious groups make so central. So I'm convinced that that we're in a period now where people are really looking for that core experience and are not as concerned and sometimes even a bit turned off by the institutional expressions and by the more doctrinal and systematic expressions of religion. So the experience is there. Also, they're very communitarian. That is, they know each other. They support each other. The churches are organized, even the big ones, into very small groups where there's a lot of face-to-face and personal encounter and personal sharing. And I think people are looking for that too. I think we're at a period in which there's a kind of suspicion, perhaps similar to the suspicion many people have about governmental institutions or the media or other seemingly distant and unresponsive institutions. Some of that is also directed toward religious institutions. But that doesn't mean people are not concerned about spiritual issues and about value and direction and purpose and meaning in life. But they are not as willing to, as it were, buy the whole package now. They're sort of looking and searching for something that makes sense to them. And I think Pentecostals have more or less stumbled into this. I mean, I studied this movement in part because it gives me a kind of a clue or a window into a much wider and far-reaching phenomenon, even than Pentecostalism, which is the emerging late 20th century new spirituality all around the world. And this is a century when people thought religion was going to become peripheral or decline or become insignificant, death of God and things like that. This did not happen, of course. But the kind of religiousness which is emerging is different from what we've seen in the past.
What is Pentecostalism?
Well, the word, of course, the word Pentecostal comes from the story in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, in which the disciples are all gathered after the death and resurrection of Jesus, and they're a little puzzled about what happens now, and suddenly the account says their tongues of flame appear over their heads, and the Holy Spirit descends on them, and they find that they can understand each other, even though they're speaking different languages. This is the main miracle of Pentecost. It's the breaking down of the barrier of languages so that the, as it were, the curse of the Tower of Babel is reversed. And what was at that time the confounding of languages is now reversed, and now people can understand each other. And this is taken to be the gift of the of the Holy Spirit, and they were meeting on that day, Pentecost, which is the fifth week, 50th day after the Passover, because after all, they were all Jews at the time. Pentecost means 50 days, so they were meeting for a Jewish feast at the time, So they've taken the name Pentecostal. The modern movement began in 1906 in Los Angeles, California, when a black preacher named William Joseph Seymour became convinced that a new Pentecost was about to happen and was in fact beginning. That is, a new regathering of the tribes, a new descent of the Spirit, a new purification of the church, and a bringing together of people who'd been divided and separated from each other. It started as a very small movement, although from the very beginning, it was racially inclusive. This was one of the signs that Seymour saw as the surest evidence that the Holy Spirit was present. The racial barriers were being broken down, and people were all... This was at a time, of course, when there was increasing racism and segregation in America in 1906. But this was a reversal of that pattern, and he thought that was the evidence that this new Pentecost had started. Well, it was a very small sect, but during the last 40 or 50 years, it's absolutely burgeoned all over the world and is now the fastest growing part of Christianity, with somewhere between 400 and 500 million people who are drawn to it.
In Pentecostal services, there are often people who speak in tongues. What's the connection between speaking in tongues and the biblical story about the Pentecost, in which everybody who speaks a different language can suddenly understand each other, and, you know, God has reversed the Tower of Babel?
Yeah, well, that's the other side. The other element of the Pentecost story is they spoke in these languages which they didn't understand. And St. Paul refers to those later in the book of, in the Epistle to the Corinthians, where he talks about the tongues of men and of angels. Now, I've heard this in many, many churches and many places around the world. And it's clear to me that what is happening here is a form of prayer, a form of praise, which transcends normal linguistic patterns. That is, it's so intense, so exuberant, so strongly felt that it just breaks the containers of normal language. Most Pentecostals I know do not believe that they are actually speaking an existing foreign language. There was a time many years ago when many of them thought that. However, now most of them say this is a language of the heart, it's a language of the Spirit. And in fact, we see this same phenomenon in many other religious movements. Some people call it ecstatic utterance, or words to that effect. It's got an intensity and a power about it, which breaks through liturgical language, normal linguistic patterns, because of its sheer intensity.
Do people who speak in tongues say that they've been prompted by Jesus to speak that way?
Yes, most of them believe that it's the Holy Spirit enabling them to pray or to praise in a way that they wouldn't normally be able to do. It's a gift. It's a gift of God, which strengthens the spiritual life, which enables one to pray more feelingly, more emotionally, more directly. It is not something that one can accomplish on one's own. However, there are other Pentecostals who claim that you can help people learn how to do this, or prepare themselves for it, or ask for it. It is not. It is a gift, but it's a gift that you have to be kind of helped to appropriate.
Would you describe one or two services that you went to and how people spoke in tongues there?
Yeah, well... let me describe the services at first. One of the first things that strikes a person who isn't used to going to Pentecostal churches is the high degree of exuberant praise, bodily movement. People are moving around. They're praying, standing up with their hands over their heads. They're sometimes moving and dancing in the aisles. The music is very, very voluble and sometimes quite loud, and the music picks up on current musical idioms in that particular country, whether it's bossa nova in Latin America or rock or jazz or gospel. here or whatever. They're perfectly willing to use the going popular musical idiom. And the speaking in tongues part can be individual people just standing in the church and speaking in a language which does not sound like any existing human language, but which obviously has some personal meaning for the person who's praying in that way. Or groups of people can begin to speak this way, sort of supporting each other. It almost sounds sometimes like a wave of sound, like an ocean wave coming along with swells up and down. For me, it's a very moving experience, even though I have not ever spoken in tongues. Being with people who are praying this way has a certain kind of power and directness, which I find very moving.
Some people think of it as being weird, right? I mean, truly, a lot of people, I think, are very uncomfortable with the whole idea of speaking in tongues and assume that there's some fakery behind it.
Yeah, I can understand how people would feel that way. Although, when you think about the whole scope of human history and the importance that ecstasy has had in the lives of people in other cultures and in other generations, I mean, our whole culture today is a very uptight one. We don't have very many opportunities for exuberant, ecstatic expression. I think it's a kind of deprivation in our lives that we don't have that. And I even wonder at times whether the need for drugs and the seeking after drugs is a self-destructive way of filling that gap that's left by our ecstasy deficit, you might say, in a very industrial, technological, and rational society. Well, here, under religious auspices in Pentecostal churches, you can have that experience. You're encouraged to have it. You're allowed to have it. I think what may be weird is not that people do this, but that so many people are deprived and never experience this vital part of human nature.
So this is what you mean, too, about the Pentecostal faith being much more experiential than abstract or intellectual or text-oriented.
Yeah, what you hear are stories. What you hear in Pentecostal churches are stories and testimonies. Very little preaching which is discursive or systematically doctrinal. Also, what you'll notice is that there's touching, laying on of hands, prayers for healing, embracing, often a lot of weeping. The very strongly felt experience of God, of the Spirit, of each other, in a society in which most religious institutions discourage that kind of display of feeling. You sit there, you listen, you may stand up to sing a hymn, you try to figure out what the sermon is about, and there isn't very much feeling. Although we accept feeling in other things. We're allowed to really jump up and down at football games, or maybe for young people at rock concerts, but religion, which over many, many centuries has also had this emotional and ecstatic side, has been pretty much drained of it in our society. And I think this is one of the reasons why Pentecostals are appealing to so many people, is they allow and encourage that to happen.
My guest is Harvey Cox. He's a professor of religion at Harvard and author of the new book, Fire from Heaven, The Rise of Pentecostal Spirituality and the Reshaping of Religion in the 21st Century. Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Harvey Cox. He's the author of the new book, Fire from Heaven, The Rise of Pentecostal Spirituality. I think a lot of people assume that fundamentalism and Pentecostalism are basically the same.
Well, they're very different, and there's a lot of tensions between the two. When Pentecostalism first started back in the early part of this century, the most severe critics of the Pentecostals were the fundamentalists, and you can understand why. The fundamentalists emphasize the inerrant infallibility of the biblical text. It's a very text and book-oriented form of Christianity, whereas Pentecostalism is very experientially and spirit-oriented. So the fundamentalists early on were the severest and most outspoken critics of the Pentecostals, and have been over many years. I think the two are often confused, mainly because both movements tend to have started about the same time, and started among lower class people in the United States, and have been confused by people who write about them. But there continue to be severe tensions, and it's really the Pentecostals who are the fastest growing branch of Christianity, not the fundamentalists. They're really not growing that quickly. They were for a while, but they've kind of fallen off and are not growing as quickly as they once were.
The Pentecostal faith started off as a mixed religion, ethnically mixed. But then there was a split, I guess, sometime in the 1920s between the black and white Pentecostals?
That's right. They started off in 1906 with what must have been a most astonishing mixture of people out there in Los Angeles at the Azusa Street Mission, where it all started. There were blacks, whites, and Latinos all together, precisely at the time when segregation and racism was on the increase in America. However, by 1914, the segregation patterns of American society had pretty much been imposed also on the Pentecostals, and they formed different churches and denominations, which were either white or black. However, just a few weeks ago, in Memphis, Tennessee, the leaders of the main black and white Pentecostal churches all came together at what some of them are now calling the Memphis Miracle, and said racial division is not only wrong, not only sinful, but it's a violation of what the Pentecostal vision is all about. At the very heart of the Pentecostal vision is this notion that God is breaking down the barriers among people, among languages and races and groups and ethnic distinctions, and creating a new and unified kind of humanity. That was really the utterly central to their original point. I think that's a very, very important move, and a rather hopeful one when you think of all the bad news we have to face in race relations in America. To see a positive and hopeful sign, step being taken by these groups seems to me encouraging.
My guest is Harvey Cox. He's a professor of religion at Harvard University and author of a new book about the rise of the Pentecostal faith called Fire from Heaven. Who are some of the Pentecostals who have become famous on their TV missions?
Well, of course, we all know about Jimmy Swaggart, perhaps, alas, one of the best-known Pentecostal ministers. Whenever I would ask about him when I was writing this book, I found that most Pentecostals are very embarrassed to admit that he is a Pentecostal, and they would point out to me that there are good and bad apples in every church, and they didn't like to have their religion judged just because of Jimmy Swaggart.
But wait, let me just stop you here. Were they embarrassed by his use of television for fundraising and by the entrance of show business into the church?
Not so much by that. They were more embarrassed by his sexual exploits and his kind of arrogance in condemning other people because of that. And then sort of falling for the same thing himself. I think the mixture of a certain amount of show business with religious proclamation has always been a part of Pentecostalism from way back. I mean, Amy Semple McPherson, who is a name some people will recognize, I'm sure, the great woman preacher of the 1930s and 40s and 50s, she was a Pentecostal. She founded her own church out in Los Angeles called Angelus Temple. And she was the one who who was convinced that a certain amount of showmanship, color, lights, movement, action, music, and so on, were important and appropriate in a religious service. So, and I've noticed this in other parts of the world, that there's in other ethnic groups among Pentecostals, that using some of the approach of show business and television programming and so on is accepted and is used. And there can be a danger for that, but it's also a connecting point to people who are looking for something. It's a world they're familiar with, and therefore it can be positively used as well.
Who are some of the other TV celebrity preachers who are Pentecostals?
Well, there aren't very many others now. I mean, there was Jim Baker, mm-hmm. Jim and Tammy Baker, but Jim was sent to jail for his financial misdoings. He's now been released from jail and says he wants to start his ministry again. But he's another figure, I think, about whom most Pentecostals are very, very embarrassed. In fact, what they'll say is we have to be very careful not to build up single people and single ministries in this way, the way these television ministries did, because it's just too much of a temptation for them to have their hand in the till or to use their fame and their power wrongly. And what they're trying to learn from this, they've told me, is to really concentrate more heavily on the local congregation, on the people that you are with on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis, and not rely so heavily on the television stars.
Harvey Cox, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Harvey Cox is a professor of religion at Harvard and author of Fire from Heaven. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.